This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Your CI score could be worth over $1 per bushel of corn, but that leaves many of us asking, what is a CI score? It's a trend to keep an eye on because those scores may soon be tied to the crops we grow, and it could be worth a significant amount of money. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by ProFarmer. Start making confident marketing decisions with ProFarmer. ProFarmer's condensed style is designed to save you time while giving you the important information you need when making those important marketing decisions. And you'll stay on top of profit opportunities with ProFarmer's mobile sell alerts and easy-to-use mobile app. Spring planting is here, and it's the perfect time to start a free trial. Just go to tryprofarmer.com. That's tryprofarmer.com to begin your free trial today. If you're like me, you hear a lot about carbon and how it relates to what we may grow. Sometimes it's difficult to decipher exactly what is most important and what we should do on our farms and in agriculture. One of the interesting pieces of this story to watch is something called your CI score. Peter Meyer is my guest, and he will talk more about this in a moment, but that score, a carbon intensity score, is tied to practices you may already be using, and unlike carbon programs, this score may incentivize certain buyers to pay you more for the crop you are already growing. In some cases, that premium may be significant. I know I learned a lot, and I think you will as well. Peter Meyer joins me, and Peter has had a long track record in agriculture doing many different things. And Peter, I might just let you begin by talking about what you do, because you have different titles and work with different organizations, and we're going to get into carbon scoring, but give a little track record about what brings you to this point, perhaps.
Well, I'm a bit of an old guy, I guess. I've been in the business about 40 years, and previous to this current position that I have, which I'll explain in a second, I was the head of grain, oil seeds, and advanced feedstock analytics at S&P Global Platts, or S&P Global Commodity Insights. And in that position, really what we did was initially we started to talk to pension funds and hedge funds about price projections for certain crops. But over the last 3 or 4 years before I left, it was more of conversation with energy companies and especially airlines regarding the availability of feedstock for both renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel. Andrew, currently, I have my hands on a couple of things. So one of the things that we're working, I'm working with is a group called Regenerative Root Solutions, and you can find us on the web at regenerativerootsolutions.com. Sorry for the plug there, Andrew, but basically, what we're doing there is there are consumer packaging goods companies in the U.S. and globally that are willing to pay farmers for sustainable practices. We coordinate between the CPGs, what we call CPGs, and the farmers to get them paid for those practices. Now, why are we in that business? Well, that business will, if a farmer is using sustainable practices that qualify them for some of this CPG money, chances are those same practices are going to morph into a very nice and low CI or carbon intensity score once the 45Z tax credit hopefully takes place on January 1st of next year.
So let's get into some of that, because some people are aware of that and some people aren't. First of all, what is the 45Z tax credit for those that haven't heard about it?
So the 45Z tax credit basically goes to the ethanol producer who is providing his or her ethanol to the sustainable aviation fuel business. In rough numbers, Andrew, what happens is that the average carbon intensity score of a cornfield in the United States is roughly 30. There are ways between tilling practices, cover crops, less NPK, you name it. There are various ways where you can get that carbon intensity score down to zero, and we actually work with some farms that have a negative carbon intensity score. So what does that mean? Well, if the average score is 30, and you, let's say, in this example, you have corn that's produced with a carbon intensity score of zero, your 45Z tax credit to the ethanol producer is worth $1.50 per bushel. So that's worth 5 cents per point. Now, that's not to say if you have, you know, if you have a score of 10, it's worth a dollar in tax credits. So this is really the 45Z tax credit, believe it or not, Andrew, has been around since George Bush Jr. And it survived George Bush. It survived Obama after that, Trump, and now Biden. It's really come to the forefront. Why has it come to the forefront? Well, a lot of these firms have, especially the airlines, have environmental, sustainable, and governance policies, and they want to be carbon neutral by 2050. And like any burgeoning business, you can't do that. You can't do that without a little bit of help. So what are we doing? Well, we're talking to all the major ethanol producers. We probably talk to a producer every week to see what they think that 45Z tax credit is going to be worth to the farmer. We have proposed to some of the largest ethanol producers in this country that it should be a joint effort between the farmer and the ethanol plant. And really, they should split the, in this case, so we're talking about before, the dollar fifty. Let's call it between the two. So the farm would get 75 cents, and the ethanol production company would get 75 cents. Now we've had various conversations with some of the largest producers who think it's only worth a nickel, and then we've been at meetings with some of the smaller producers that have gone publicly. Have said in front of a group of 40 or 50 farmers, we think you deserve the entire tax credit. Now, I've been in the business a long time. You're a farmer as well, Andrew. You know farmers have long memories. So when somebody says something like that, they better be able to back it up if they're going to provide the farmer with the entire 45Z tax credit.
So some of the numbers you threw out there probably have ears perked up, because we're talking about what could be a significant amount of money per bushel for corn. Get me over to the carbon intensity score. How will that take place? Because somehow that will have to be documented and followed and so forth. So how is the mechanism going to take place on the backside of this?
That's a bit of a Wild West show at the moment, Andrew. And that's really why we are out there, why we sign up farmers for these consumer packaging goods monies. We're also educating farmers on the 45Z and the CI score. So there are groups out there that say, hey, for X amount of dollars, I will validate your carbon intensity score. Just give me your data from John Deere Center or whatever software you're using. It literally is as easy as that, Andrew. And we'll validate the score. And then I always raise my hand when folks make these comments and say, which ethanol company has decided to accept your validation? And of course, the hand goes down very quick. Because we're talking about a tax credit, which is going to be monitored by the Department of Energy, by the Treasury Department, by the Internal Revenue Service, your carbon intensity score is going to come under tremendous scrutiny. So whoever verifies your carbon intensity score is going to be setting themselves up for some liability. Let's be honest about it. So when we talk to the ethanol producers, and even on the consumer packaging goods companies we talk to, we ask them specifically, you're taking risk here. What are your validation parameters? And they haven't really decided yet. Now, in my opinion, if we talk to the largest ethanol producer in this country, I think what they're going to do is they're going to say, give us access to your John Deere Center, and then we'll be able to pull that data out. Because at the end of the day, Andrew, they're the ones that are going to have to stand up to an audit. So there are folks out there and groups out there that are saying, okay, you know, we'll get that CI score for you, whatever. But the other point, Andrew, is that we don't know what the rules are yet. So there are two different models. There's the GREET model, G-R-E-E-T, and the CORSIA model. The CORSIA model is the European, otherwise referred to as the European model, is a little bit tougher on how you come up with your CI score. Some are out there saying your CI score is what it is, and it's just a matter of the modeling. Before we spend any money, we want to know what the rules are, and we want to see what this is. Now, Tom Vilsack, Secretary Vilsack, has said that it was supposed to be due April 1st, this sort of hybrid model that they're working on for the 45Z regarding carbon intensity score, didn't come to fruition. We've now been promised, or the market's been promised, May 15th. We'll have to see. But it is a bit of a... that was a long-winded explanation, Andrew. I'm sorry, but it was a, you know, it is a bit of a Wild West show at the moment. The one thing you have to know, whether you're in a consumer packaging goods program or the 45Z, these are one-year programs. This is not going to be like carbon credits where you basically have to sign up with your provider for 4 or 5 years and you're stuck there. That's not going to happen. These are all one-year programs.
So January 1st may seem like a ways off, but whenever we talk about what has to be done between now and then, how will everything get done between now and then, or will it?
It is a problem because we're already in planting season, right? So now a farmer at this point, if a farmer's halfway through planting, he or she can't change their practices. And literally what we're talking about with the 45Z is going to be your 24 crop. Will they allow some 23 crop in there that's going to get the credit? Those rules still haven't been written. But for the most part, and this is why we're working with farmers, and we have about 1.5 million acres signed up already, working out with farmers who are displaying sustainable practices with the CPGs, like I said, because that kind of lends itself to having a lower carbon intensity score. But yeah, I'm with you. And I will tell you that the longer this takes, the longer I think, well, maybe it doesn't go until January of 26. But I can tell you that my group, there's four partners in this Regenerative Root Solutions group. We've talked to people that are way smarter than us, and they are convinced, whether you talk to somebody on the protein side or somebody on the trading side, they just shake and say, nope, it's going to be in on January 1st of 25. So unfortunately, if you're not using sustainable practices, you may not be able to qualify. But that being said, you know, if you're just doing reduced till and maybe you're harvesting in a timely manner, believe it or not, that's one of the parameters, your carbon intensity score will go down. But you may not get it to zero unless you're, you know, really using manure, whether it be chicken manure or hog manure or whatever, to lower your NPK or just doing no-till at all or strip till. So, you know, yeah, I'm with you. I wish these rules would be written pretty soon here on what model they decide to use, because otherwise I get more questions than I have answers. And that's very frustrating for us.
Is there a way that farmers can have an idea of what their CI or carbon intensity score would be? Is there any model that says, well, if you use these practices, you can take it down by so many points? How is that even determined?
Yeah, sure. So you can go on to the Department of Energy website and just look for the GREET model, G-R-E-E-T, and that'll show you the parameters. But I would the parameters that are used to calculate your CI score. But I would urge a little bit of caution there, that model is not the model that's going to be used. That model was rejected by the White House working group that is looking into which model to use. It was rejected out of hand because it was a little bit too, what's the word I can use, generous, probably, as far as land use. I mean, there are all these parameters, change in land use and whatever. And it just seemed like, you know, they just didn't want to accept the current ethanol production, given, you know, where we are at the moment at 29, well, let's call it a general CI score of 30. They just didn't want to accept that. They want to lower that. And everybody wants to lower it. The ethanol producers want to lower it too. I mean, the typical ethanol plant in the United States, Andrew, has a carbon intensity score of somewhere between 55 and 60, and they're under tremendous pressure to lower that to below 50. Some of them can do it by putting the carbon dioxide in the ground. Others, you know, I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but I guess I will. Without a carbon pipeline in certain states, especially in the West, it's going to be hard to facilitate the carbon dioxide storage, shall we say, while plants in the East will have a little bit easier time putting it in the ground.
That's what I wanted to ask. You know, we focused on the ethanol plants, and rightly so, because of the tax credit, but what does that mean for farmers who may not be selling to an ethanol plant or not might have one close by? I guess we might say, well, if the ethanol plants are competing for that corn, maybe it makes all markets go up. But still, what do you tell folks that think, well, I'm not selling to an ethanol plant right now, so what's it mean for me?
That's a great question. And we've absolutely been focused on that. But our conversations with the ethanol plants are also dovetailed with conversations with some of the largest protein producers in this country. And when we talk to them, they are a little bit, they are worried that there might be a bifurcated cash market now, a cash corn market now, right? One with a low CI score, one with a high CI score. Now you'll say, let's say in the instance of pork production, your hog's not going to care what the CI score is of the corn that it's eating. But that's not necessarily true, because I mentioned earlier about these companies with these sustainability reports, ESG reports, and believe it or not, the hog producers are also very, very concerned about lowering their carbon footprint as well. So the carbon footprint of a hog is based 45% on the feed. So in order for a pork producer to lower the carbon intensity, their overall carbon intensity score, they would be heavily relied upon the feed, since that's 45% of the carbon footprint of a hog. So this is, again, why we are working with consumer packaging goods companies, because they also want to endear the farmer to their cause. They want to lower their carbon footprint. At the same time, they feel this competitive push or competitive pull from ethanol plants. So that's something we're working on pretty much every day. We have meetings with the protein guys, the chicken guys, the pork guys, all the time, to talk about this. Why, you know, hey, how can you guys help us? By that I mean how we can help them be able to facilitate corn that they're afraid is going to, the first stop is going to be at an ethanol plant, and they're going to be the second stop, and they're going to get the high carbon intensity score because they want some low CI score corn as well. So I don't have a definitive answer for you there, Andrew, but I hope that kind of answers that. There are other folks in the feed business that are very interested in your low carbon intensity score corn.
There are several carbon programs out there already, and some may have signed up for them. So how do you see those programs then working into what is coming, whether it's with 45Z tax credits or, as you mentioned, just finding corn that goes into livestock production that has a low CI score? Do those programs operate separate, or what would you tell people that maybe have already signed up for other carbon programs then?
Well, if you sign up for a program already, you're obviously going to be tied in for the 2 or 3 years that you're with on those carbon credits. But I would pay attention to what's going on around you, even though it may not affect you. So carbon credits, Andrew, are what they call a carbon offset. What we're talking about here with low CI score corn is actually a carbon inset. What's the difference? Well, Scott Kirby, who's the CEO of United Airlines, who is pushing his airline as hard as they can to lower their carbon footprint. And like other airlines, such as Delta and Southwest Airline, we talked to all three of them. They have a net carbon zero goal by 2050. Okay, so what Scott Kirby says is carbon offsets are more of a feel-good thing, right? When you go to buy an airline ticket, you can buy, and I was just traveling a few weeks ago with United, as a matter of fact, on the bottom it says you can offset your carbon output on this flight by donating X amount of dollars, whatever it was, $17, whatever. But Scott Kirby says that's only a feel good thing, because what happens is that there's only so, in his words, there are only so many trees we can plant. And he's right. So those carbon offsets make you feel good. Yeah, you know, I gave $17, I planted 20 trees, this and that. It makes me feel good about my flight. But the carbon insets are the game. So what I am saying here is that these carbon offsets through the carbon credits, that's probably going to go the way of the Etzel. And I would think that the carbon insets are the only ways that especially the airlines can make a real difference in their global carbon footprint.
I'm curious, when you're out visiting with farmers, and I think myself included, we hear a lot about these things. And after a while, we say, I just give up. I'm not going to do anything because it's way too confusing and so forth. How do you cut through that? Because there's so much noise out here in this space about this. But I think people have wondered, okay, what's real? What's going to stay with us? How do I sort through all that clutter?
Well, hopefully the conversation today has added a little bit of clarity. But we're open to discuss this with any farmer that has any interest in it. My email address is pete@regenerativerootsolutions.com, or you can go on to regenerativerootsolutions.com and just see what we're talking about here. We're trying to educate, but I think as well as compensate the farmers for their sustainable practices via the CPGs. But I think the misnomer here, Andrew, is that what we hear a lot from farmers is, I don't want the government telling me how to farm. Okay, I'm in charge of my farm. I don't want the government telling. The government is not telling you how to farm with the 45Z. What they're saying is that if you use these practices, you're probably going to get paid more. Now, we also hear from farmers, well, that's going to be good for a couple years, and then pretty soon it'll get incorporated into my cash bid and this and that. I can't argue that fact. But the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of interest in these programs because we're in a low price environment, right? I mean, as we speak today, corn's trading at 440 in the front. December corn, I think, closed at 475 yesterday or whatever. You know, if we were at $7, Andrew, people wouldn't even give me the time of day, I don't think. But because we're in a low price environment and we're well below the cost of production for many, many farmers in this country, they're more interested in these programs. Maybe it only lasts 2 years. Maybe it does. And people say that, well, the 45Z is only good from 25 through 26. Yeah, that's true. But I've never met a politician that's going to give you a tax credit in perpetuity, right? It can always be renewed. It can always be moved on. But if we're not going to take advantage of it in 2 years in a low price environment, well, then, you know, there are a lot of, you know, especially on this carbon intensity scoring, there's a lot of misinformation. All I would say, Andrew, is I would urge some caution. If you have some time, you know, just spend some time reading, pay attention to what's going on, because this thing is going to change here. Once May 15, if we get the modeling by May 15, the picture will become much clearer. And then hopefully at that point, you and I can have a little bit more of a better conversation. I can add some clarity for your listeners.
Is there any move that anything will happen on the soy diesel side? We've talked about ethanol and we have sustainable aviation fuel that'd be coming from beans that might go to those airlines. What's happening on that side?
So on the renewable diesel side, soybean oil is still being used. It's the largest feedstock used for renewable diesel. The problem with renewable diesel is that it's only sold into three states with their low carbon fuel standards, and that would be California, Washington, and Oregon. There is a push throughout the country, in places like New Jersey, throughout the Midwest, to implement a low carbon fuel standard in some of those states as well. The problem is it costs money. But I will say this: while we've talked a lot about the carbon intensity of your corn, there will be some interest in the carbon intensity of your soybeans as well. When I mentioned the consumer packaging goods companies, we do have companies that are paying for low for sustainable practices on soybeans as well. So it's not just sitting on the side, but the focus at the moment is on corn. Even though you can produce sustainable aviation fuel from soybean oil and some of the other feedstocks that are available, soybean oil, unfortunately, has the highest carbon intensity score of any of the feedstocks used for either renewable diesel or sustainable aviation fuel at the moment. Let's say the feedstock of choice would be used cooking oil. It gets imported from China, but it's really not. There's a lot of, we could spend an hour talking about the used cooking oil market, but that has the lowest carbon intensity score. I got off topic there a little bit, but there is still some interest, especially from the consumer packaging goods companies, around your sustainability score on your soybean fields.
For those that are wanting to learn more, I suppose regenerativerootssolutions.com is a good place for them to learn more and find out about carbon intensity scores and how all this may move forward, correct?
That's correct. So if you go on to that website, you can enroll your just a blurb about us, and then it takes you to another website where you can enroll your acres. There's no commitment on your part. It doesn't cost you anything. If we have a CPG program that comes through for your area, because the CPG programs go state by state, you know, like a very large dog food producer called us and said, believe it or not, they said, well, I need 100,000 acres in Nebraska of corn. How long do you have to get it? And, you know, we said we can get it to you in 72 hours. So once you're enrolled in those things, you know, it doesn't tie into that. Unlike what you mentioned earlier, Andrew, about the carbon credits. If we have a program, we'll get in touch. If we don't have a program, we'll also keep you educated about what's happening on the 45Z side.
I appreciate the information, and we'll definitely have to get back in touch as we continue to move down this track.
Andrew, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Thanks for joining me on this week's show. Remember, you can follow Farming the Countryside and our daily show, American Countryside, on Facebook, Twitter, or X, Instagram, and YouTube. Just type in Farming the Countryside or American Countryside. And you can catch past editions of this show by simply going to farmingthecountryside.com or your favorite podcast platform. I hope your spring season is going well. Many locations received rain this past week, including our farm. We have some of the crop in, but still a ways to go. I hope wherever you are at, you're having a successful spring season. I appreciate you joining me. I'm Andrew McCrae. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. This edition of Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to tryprofarmer.com for your free trial today.